Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, we will be speaking with Anthony Tasgau, or widely well known as Tas, about his new book, The Storytelling Workbook. Tas spent 15 years as an ad agency planner before setting up POV, a strategic brand consultancy. He is a training director for the Chartered Institute of Marketing and a visiting lecturer at Buckingham, Nottingham Trent, and Beijing Normal Universities. Tas's new book, The Storytelling Workbook, is a practical 9-week program to help you learn to tell your own narrative and present your story, whether it be for your CV, your dating apps, or your own personal writing. It is an entertaining, instructive, and interactive guide to becoming a better storyteller across all facets of your personal and professional life. Thanks very much, Tas, for joining us today for Lit Radio Podcast. So my first question for you is, why did you decide to write a storytelling workbook 7 years after publishing the storytelling book? Why the subject is still relevant?
Hi, thanks, Thea. Well, I think it's been, as you say, about 7 years. But if you think about the history of storytelling's been around for thousands of years. So I think it's a subject that isn't going to be exhausted in just one book. So yeah, as you say, I wrote it a few years ago. I'd already been interested in it. I was doing a lot of training, speaking, and I found that there were so many other issues that were raised. There were people sending me questions. And as I said, I've been doing a lot of training in the last 7 years. So there was plenty more material. But why is it still relevant? Well, storytelling has always been relevant. But even more, I think, now, because if you look at the explosion in new media, if you look at, you know, all the social media channels, if you look at the amount of news that we are subjected to, think about how much information we receive. Storytelling is, amongst other things, a way of organizing and understanding all that information. So I think it's even more relevant now than it was 7 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Storytelling is part of all our jobs as marketers. All right, so why good storytelling is so powerful and important in today's world?
I think it's always been powerful. I think we've always realized the power and the mystery of a good story. And one of the things that I keep going back to is the fact that as children, we learn about the world through storytelling. And then we perhaps have children of our own and we talk to them and help them understand the world again through storytelling. And we read the news or we watch the news, and we can begin to see how stories help frame the news. And it's so powerful, I think, because we actually don't even realize a lot of the time how storytelling is working on us. And there's a quote, I think, from the author Ben Okri, who says, storytelling is mighty and mysterious. And it is mighty because it has an awfully, awfully powerful effect on us, sometimes without us knowing. And it's mysterious because we just don't even know it's working on us a lot of the time. And it is important, as I say, because particularly when there is so much going on and so much information, and often in our work lives, there's so much data, content, storytelling is a way of our brain framing and understanding and just making sense, really, of everything that's going on around us. And we take it for granted. I write a lot in the books. All my books actually about the brain. And someone once described the brain as being story shaped, which I thought was a lovely expression, which is just a way of saying that's what story does. It helps our brain make sense of and categorize the world.
Absolutely. All right. And what makes up a good storytelling?
Well, the short answer is you have to read the book, obviously. Books. I think there's a number of things. I think one is the ability to understand the power of emotion. And again, that's something that I write a lot about in my training, behavioral economics, storytelling insight. Emotion is absolutely core to human behavior. It's core to, again, how our brain categorizes and understands the world. So a good storyteller knows how to identify and amplify emotions. So if you want to watch, I don't know, Line of Duty or Bridgerton or Gentleman Jack or Severance, which I heartily recommend to everyone on Apple Plus TV, good stories use and find our emotions, again, often without us knowing. And I think that's one of the most important things that I sort of tell people. The next thing I talk about a lot is, and everyone who knows me will know this, having what I call a golden thread, having something which runs through your story. Because again, too often when people are speaking or writing or doing presentations or Word documents or speeches, people just ramble. They go from one fact to another or one detail to another. But the brain values coherence. The brain needs something it can hold on to. So again, a good storyteller knows the power of structure and thread. And again, I think what Philip Pullman called the path through the woods. So that's for me, that's a not a bad introduction to what makes a good storyteller.
Absolutely. I think what you just shared are great skills that any storyteller need to possess. But can anyone be a storyteller?
I think so, because as I say, it's something that's universal. I've been around a large part of the world doing training on storytelling, and you know, every culture, every country, every religion, faith, whatever on earth has storytelling. The ability to tell a story, yeah, it's a little bit harder, but I've worked with people, and even people who think they can't do it are naturally able to do it, because our brains are designed to tell stories. The only problem I found, which is what I write about in the first part of the first book and also in the storytelling workbook, is we've created a sort of culture of communication in business and education, even when we write our CVs. We've created this culture where we almost like deliberately block storytelling. We just pump things full of facts and numbers and charts and graphics, and that gets in the way. So part of how to be a storyteller is unlearning, is learning all the things that we've been taught or we've just adopted, which get in the way of telling a good story. Once I find that I can work with people and show them where they're going wrong, which again, most people sort of know, then you can open the door to reminding ourselves what storytelling is and how to use it.
That's, I think it's really interesting insight. So why do you think that coaching was created where we just box storytelling and we're obsessed with data and facts instead?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And as I said, I've spent many years thinking about this, partly because I've been stuck in that world. I worked in ad agencies for 15, 20 years. And even when I work with market research companies or clients or insight teams, the desire to just absolutely bombard people with facts and numbers is just, as I say, it's a sort of cultural thing that's been developed. Maybe it's developed by management consultants, I don't know, but it's got far, far deeper and it's gone far broader now. And I think it's simply because, like anything, after a while, you get used to certain things or you get used to using certain jargon, and then you almost forget what it means. And I find this a lot with people when they're doing presentations or documents, is they don't even know that they're doing it. They don't even realize that they've written 50 slides full of, you know, meaningless jargon and just enormous amounts of data. So, as I said, a lot of what I have to do is get them to realize, you know, it's like therapy, right? Get them to realize they have a problem, show them what the problem is, and also create a culture within the organization. So a lot of it I do is within companies, is get that company or that department to realize that this is what everyone is doing. And if everyone stops doing it and everyone can start to learn to tell a proper story and reduce the amount of content they have and think about headlines and think about magic number three, if everyone does that, that's the first stage. People, we can stop, as I say, cramming everything into 30 minutes of slides. And we can get rid of that sort of really pernicious culture.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's people just need to understand they have a problem.
Yeah,
as you described it. Yeah, absolutely. And my next question would be, what are the biggest obstacles to storytelling? So probably one of it would be that people don't realize that they're obsessed with data and facts instead of just engaging with feelings and telling a good story, but what other obstacles are there?
Yeah, I think some of it I sort of just covered really, but one of the other areas as well in business is this sense that business has to be serious and professional and dry and clinical and cold. And again, anyone who's been to my training will know this is something I really get angry about and rant about. I understand that, you know, we're paid good money, people are very serious but in business and government. But the fact is, if we're trying to communicate or we're trying to persuade, giving people information is not enough. And that is probably one of the biggest obstacles. The assumption that if you give people enough information, they will listen to you and they will be persuaded by your arguments. And again, this is sort of behavioral economics 101. So apologies for anyone out there hearing me talk about behavioral economics again. But behavioral economics reminds us that telling people doesn't work. If you just give people information and tell them what to do, talking, if you like, what's called system two, that's only a small part of the job. You have to talk to system one, which is where the emotions live. It's where the unconscious characteristics that make us who we are live. And getting to system one is not about facts. It's about feelings. It's about emotions. It's about being playful and it's about surprise. So again, one of the things that I always say to people is, if you're doing a presentation, it doesn't have to be in business. It can be your CV, it can be your Tinder profile, because we try and talk about that in the new book. It can be education. You might be a teacher talking to parents about year 10's progress. Whatever you're doing, the one emotion you should always think about is surprise. So if you're not going to say something surprising, or if you're not going to produce something surprising, why are you doing anything at all? So I think that's one of the biggest obstacles, the fact that people just don't value the importance of surprise. They're happy just to tell people stuff that they know, or tell people stuff that will go into the brain and will just be ignored. So that's, I think, probably one of the biggest obstacles that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that when I did a lot of presentations, yeah, that feeling of surprise is usually missing. All right, but so once people realize that being obsessed with facts and new information is not going to catch people's attention, how do they stay away from all of that data that's so easy to include in our presentations and CVs? How can they learn to use people's feelings to tell a good story, a meaningful story, something that would be really interesting for the audience?
Yeah, I mean, I talk a lot about this in the book, and I work with people on exercises. But the main thing is to create the golden thread. You create your argument, you create your hypothesis, you create what you think is a logical path through your speech or through the presentation or through your CV or your Tinder profile, whatever it might be. You create that thread and you keep that thread really clear and clean, and you make sure, again, it has an emotional core. And then what you do, and it's one of my favorite expressions and acronyms, then what you do, as you say, you take away all the dull data. But an expression acronym that I've borrowed for this purpose, once you've created your golden thread, once you know exactly where you're going, you are ruthless. You're an editor, like a journalist, and you take away everything that is TBU, which stands for true but useless. And I think that's, again, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned and one of the things that people feel the hardest thing to achieve. In other words, you have to learn what to take out. There's a Danish science writer called Tor Norotranders, and he coined this word, which I think is lovely. He says, we worry too much about information, the stuff that we put in, and not enough about what he calls exformation, the stuff that we have to take out. So again, answering your question, Tay, a lot of it is about, okay, once I've got my thread and it's really short and it's really simple and it's emotional and it's memorable, the task is then to take everything else away that isn't relevant to that thread. And people find that really hard sometimes because they feel, oh, I must show everything. I must show my homework, like children. Or if it's a research company or a client, they'll say, look, the client's paid me a lot of money to do all of this work. I must show it all. And I say, no, you don't. The client hasn't paid to see everything you've done. They've paid to see the insight they're going to get, or something new and surprising that they can do. So the exact opposite is the case. You should definitely, definitely not show everything. You can hide it. You can hide your site if it's a PowerPoint, or you can have a separate deck, or you can create an appendix. But the thing you must resist above all is the desire to show everything, because then if you show everything, you have nothing. So that's one of my answers to that question.
That, I think that's really interesting insight. So I think we all need to learn how to be better editors of our own work.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so one of the chapters in the book is called How to Get Past the Attention Span.
Yes.
So how do we do that? How we make sure we are not ignored when delivering presentations or webinars?
Yeah, let me just explain the expression in case anyone's listening hasn't picked it up. I talk about attention spam with an M. And again, this was something, one of my books was called The Inspiratorium. It was about insight. What is insight? And I think one of the biggest components of insight is serendipity, things happening by accident. So a few years ago, I was writing a paper about memory and attention and advertising. And if anyone's listening, if you look at your keyboard, the letters N and M are next to each other on the keyboard. So I accidentally typed attention spam with an M. And ever since then, I've sort of really fallen in love with it as an idea, because it's my way of saying, you've got to think of the brain as a filter. Whoever you're talking to, if you're presenting to a group, if you're writing a CV for prospective employers, if you're looking at writing your, you know, profile to go on Tinder or some other dating app, whatever it might be, your audience will have an awful lot of other stuff that's competing with what you're saying. So I now use attention spam as a way of saying, this is what you have to get through. So instead of thinking that everything we say goes into their attention inbox, so like I'm talking to you now, I'm hoping it goes into your attention inbox. A lot of it will go into what I call attention spam, because the brain cannot just absorb and retain infinite amounts of information. So attention spam is my way of saying, that's what you've got to clear. That's what you've got to get through. So when you're doing a presentation, if you're doing a webinar, if you're doing a speech, if you're giving a lecture, or any of the other things I've talked about, profiles in Tinder profiles, CVs, it's the same task. And the way you get through attention spam is some of the things I've talked about and some of the other things we can come on to or in the book. But the main thing is realizing that it exists, because what we tend to do again is assume that everything we say, especially if it's about us, everything we say is so incredibly important and so incredibly appealing and so incredibly attractive that the audience will definitely hang on every word that we say. And that's just not the case. However much the audience might be waiting for us to deliver a talk or give us the results or tell us about who we are in case, you know, we might be going out on a date or something. However much that is the case, it is the way that the brain works to think, okay, unless this is interesting or meaningful or emotional, I'll turn off. So that's what we have to do. Realize, how do we make sure our audience doesn't turn off? And some things I've talked about, like the golden thread, etc., are a way of doing that. And there are many others in the book.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating. And then another thing that you mentioned in the book is the rule of three. So can you explain what that is and how can we use it for effective storytelling?
Yeah, there's quite a few things that I write about in the book, which I sort of hope people will go, yeah, I sort of know that already, but it's just like validation. So I'm hoping people will know about, you know, having a thread, whatever. But also, I suspect most people that read the book will think, actually, now I think about it, three does seem to occur a lot. And if you just think about any examples, you know, three wise men, three blind mice, veni, vidi, vici, liberte, egalite, fraternite, just do it. All these expressions rely on the rule of three. And I've obviously researched it, and there seem to be psychological reasons for it, musical reasons, so bing, bing, bong, comedians talk about the comic triple, where you have a line, a second line, and then the gag, the punchline. It seems to be pretty universal that threes appear all over the place. You can divide things, obviously, into two, but after three, the brain seems to sort of fall off a cliff. We can remember three things really easily. So again, something I talk about in the book, in fact, I talked about it last week with a client in Germany, was if you are writing a presentation or a speech, I always say this is one great way of using a rule of three. Divide it into three parts, and then for each of those sections, give that section a title that summarizes that part of the speech or the book or the presentation. And just remember those three titles or those three words, so that if something happens, like you lose your presentation or the computer doesn't talk to the tech, and that's happened to us all at some point, if you just remember those three things, it's amazing how much of the whole presentation or speech your brain can actually remember. There's something really, really powerful about three. As I say, if you try and do more than three, it doesn't work. But one of the other things I'll say about storytelling as well is, and again, I won't name them just to protect the guilty, but I was working a while ago with a client helping her write a speech. And I said, okay, what are you trying to achieve? She said, okay, here are all the things I want to talk about. Okay. There are 13 of them. And I sort of, sorry, what? Yes, I have 13 things I need to tell the audience. And I had to sort of, calm down, take a breath and say, you can't do that. She said, yeah, I have to. I said, no, you can't, because the problem is the brain. And she said, what do you mean? That's just how our brains work. You cannot expect people to remember or take in 13 things. After three, they will literally switch off. And then I explained it to her. She sort of said, yeah, actually, I suppose that's true. So what we then did was take those 13 and then sort of ladder them to make three overall ideas. And then within those three, try to get as many of the 13 in there. But it was the three higher level ideas that we had to work on. So there are all sorts of ways in which three works. But that's, I think that's a couple of my favorite examples.
Yeah, I really like that example. Yeah, just when you say it's 13 points, 13 ideas to share with
all. It's not the only time it's happened as well, Taya. It's happened to me a lot of times, but that's my favorite one.
Yeah, I can guess that. But yeah, it's really interesting, the rule of three. And I think if we all follow that rule, it would be much easier to get rid of all the dull data and facts that we tend to use. Okay, let's move on to marketing. So how important is storytelling when building your brand?
Yeah, this is one of my, this is like my home game. I started several centuries ago working in ad agencies. So advertising and marketing has always been like my sort of first, my first home, really. And can I just go back and regress a bit? Because people often ask me how I ended up in advertising, because I studied Latin, Greek and ancient history at university. A few years before a certain Mr. Boris Johnson. And I'd always loved stories. And in particular, I spent a lot of time reading Homer, Virgil, Catullus, and all the great classic stories of sort of Roman Greece. And never really lost that. I still, anyone who reads my books knows that I still talk about the classics and bring them into the storytelling book and the storytelling workbook. So when I went into advertising, which was a bit of a shock to a lot of people for me, I thought, great, because advertising is all about stories, brands all about stories. But I was a bit disappointed because I found that an awful lot of clients I was working with, an awful lot of advertising campaigns, brands, were very factual. They were very sort of just informational, telling people how great the product was or how many, how attractive it would make them or how. And I kept thinking, where are the stories? Because surely brands are all about stories. You think about great brands, you think about Nike or Apple or Virgin, and they're built on great characters or great stories or great anecdotes. And it took me a while, really, to understand that and again, this goes back to what I said before, that we've created a culture in marketing and business, which became very, very sort of factual and informational, and I'm afraid very dull. And another word that I use a lot, so apologies to everyone who knows it. We've created what I call an arithmocracy, which is a sort of rule of number. And I think marketing, which always wanted to become more accountable and explain how marketing works in terms of delivering return on investment, what that tended to do was make marketing and branding and advertising even more dry and even more factual than it used to be. So one of the reasons that I left the ad agency world and started training on storytelling and writing and lecturing on it was that I kept thinking, if you want your brands to be more distinctive, and that's what it comes down to, you've got to start thinking about telling stories and stop doing the things that I've talked about earlier. Stop being obsessed with facts and information, talking to system two and talking to your consumer and audience as if it's like a parent child and you're telling them, you know, how wrong they are and what they should do. So for me, it was one of the things I did do with a number of brands when I was working in agencies, and I still do it now. So over the last 3 or 4 years, I've had the wonderful pleasure and fun, for example, of working with the Royal Albert Hall in London. And I won't refer to it as the iconic Royal Albert Hall because I tried to tell them to stop doing that. And that was a brand where basically they were a venue and they would put on lots and lots of events, something like 400 events a year. And as I speak, last night they had the Olivier Awards, the big sort of stage awards at the Royal Albert Hall. And it was the 150th anniversary in 2021. So about 3 or 4 years ago, they asked me to help them tell their story, build their brand, in particular for making the 150th anniversary a big event, a big moment in their lives. And even there, where you think, oh, they must be a, because it's such a fantastic venue and they've had so many famous people, you know, politicians and bands and one-offs, and they have Remembrance Day and the proms, you think, oh, they'd understand all that. But they still ended up talking about putting on different shows and different events in a very sort of slightly flat and clinical way. So I can say this now because it's in the public realm. So I spent some time working with them and interviewing a lot of the people that work there and some of the high-ups, but also talking to promoters that put on bands and events at the hall. And rather than sort of just describing what they were like, we ended up coming up with three words which we thought described the Royal Albert Hall, and we tried to sort of tell the story off the back of those words. And these were the three words. The first one was eclectic, which means there were an awful lot of different, really, really different types of shows and events, as I say, music, politics, serious things, funny things, boxing. In fact, something called chess boxing, which, trust me, it was a thing. So eclectic means very varied. The next one was electric, which was the name of, or the word given by lots of bands. They said, when you go on the stage, it has this electrifying feeling because the acoustics are so great and it's such a beautiful stage. And the third word we used was eccentric, because it has that slightly bonkers English, British eccentricity about the place. So those became the three words: eccentric, eclectic, and electric. And we put those words to the senior people at the Royal Albert Hall and said, this is what we want to use as the basis of your story. Nothing too factual, not about how many events you put on, but just a sort of feeling about this is what the hall is. And to our great surprise, because a lot of the people that ran the hall were not, they weren't advertising people, they were not young either, but they really liked that idea. So for me, that's just one recent example of how storytelling and personality and character can help build your brand.
Absolutely. And even in my personal experience, the brands that use really good storytelling are the ones that I feel more most connected with. So I absolutely think that's probably one of the most important skills for every marketer.
Absolutely.
And then what really fascinates me about the storytelling workbook is that you don't only give tips on how to improve our storytelling skills when delivering presentation or preparing our CVs or just in general, our storytelling skills in business, but you also say that those tips are really equally essential when we are writing our Tinder or any other social media bio. So why is good storytelling equally important for our social media and for our Tinder accounts? How can that help us?
Yeah, I think it's because it's the same principles, really. Because again, people say to me, oh, storytelling, it's just for, you know, books, or maybe they'll say it's for presentations or speeches, but the same principles work across all forms of communication. So I think I say this in the book, but a lot of what I talk about isn't just storytelling. As I said, I was a classicist. So it's what Aristotle used to call rhetoric, or the Greeks and Romans called rhetoric. And rhetoric really is that the art of persuasion. So for me, this is where it's not just storytelling. This is about, it's about understanding how to influence and persuade other people. But I have learned over the years, though, if I tell people I'm going to talk about rhetoric, no one listens to me. So I call it storytelling. But the reason why it works with, if you're writing something on Tinder, if your CV or whatever it might be, is the same principles obtain, which is you have to stand out. So whether you're doing a speech, whether you are a brand like Apple or the Royal Albert Hall or Nokia or wherever, whoever it is, or Microsoft, the same goal applies, which is part of, or possibly the most important part of what you have to do, is get through attention spam and be noticed. If you're not noticed, everything that you do is a waste of time. So if you're writing a Tinder profile and you want to say, okay, why should someone go out for a drink with me or meet me? You've got to find something about you which is different and interesting and emotional. Because if not, you know, people will swipe the wrong way. And again, it goes equally with social media and certainly with CVs. If you are looking for a new job or trying to get your first job, it is almost absolutely going to be the case that you are up against many other alternatives. You might be lucky, you may be down to a few. But if you're at the first stage, you might be competing with 50 or 100 or 200 or 1,000 people. Again, I know from the ad agency world that sometimes when it's the graduate recruitment drive, they can literally get thousands of people. And because I've been on both sides of this, I know what it's like. You have to be, if you're the person looking at CVs, and assuming obviously it's a person, not a bot, because it's probably even harder with a bot. But if you are the person looking at these CVs, you see what's different. You see what stands out. You see what is interesting. And as you said, Taya, you look at things that are emotional. You think, is this the sort of person that I would like to work with? Or is this the sort of person who I think would fit in? And obviously, if it's Tinder, is this the sort of person I'd like to spend time with? And for me, all the storytelling things that I've talked about apply absolutely in the same way. You don't just batter people with details. You give them a thread. You come up with something that might be a personality characteristic, like I mentioned, for the Royal Albert Hall. Or it might be something that you've done or a particular interest that you have. And as long as that is relevant, as long as it isn't true but useless, you make sure that you hone in on that. What you don't do, and again, this is what people are guilty of sometimes, is just say the same old things in the same old way as everyone else. And one of the other things I've just been reminded of, because I've got a meeting tomorrow on this subject, is people's LinkedIn profiles. I think there's an example I use in the book. I've looked at many, many LinkedIn profiles for various reasons, and a lot of them are incredibly generic. You know, you would not know anything about this person because the language they use, you know, IT-oriented or success-oriented, professional, you know, a lot of these words become meaningless. They just become sort of vanilla. So again, in whatever format that we're looking at, presentations, webinars, CVs, Tinder, LinkedIn, the same sorts of, I think the same sorts of principles will help us out. So look for something different. What's surprising? Create a golden thread. If you're going to say anything, only the maximum of three things, because that's all that people remember. So I think that's why, going back almost to your first question, that's why I still think the subject is still relevant, because there are so many ways of communicating, whether it's personally or professionally, so many media and channels now, that storytelling can improve and enhance all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like what you said, that everything is about us being noticed. And I can see how that's relevant for everything we do, everything we write or present or speak about.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. All right. And then my final question is, what are your top three tips for anyone trying to improve their storytelling skills?
The first one is obviously buy all my books. I think I've covered a lot of this already. I do talk about the golden thread, and I think I will just finally just talk about that a little bit more, because I think that is the one thing that I've learned over the years. The biggest single problem that people have in their presentations, in their documents, in their speeches, when they're doing their LinkedIn profile, their CVs, etc. The biggest problem they have is structure. People just tend to throw everything together. And again, I've seen it, you know, with students, I've seen it with clients, I've seen it with my kids when they're doing their CVs, I've seen all across all sorts of different businesses, cultures, etc. People just try and throw everything in. And as I say, the first thing you have to do is clear what Philip Pullman called the path through the woods, because that's what a golden thread is. That's what a story is. You could, the storyteller, the person who has all the presentation, the material, the content, if you like, the woods, the trees, the forest, the grass, that's all the background. It's your job, it's your goal, if you're the storyteller, to create a path through the woods which you can lead your audience through. So I think for me, that is probably the single biggest tip that I would suggest. And again, anyone who's, you know, been to my training or heard me talk will not be surprised on that one. I think the second one is, again, coming from an advertising background, I'm a great believer in the power of headlines. So going along with the golden thread, what I really recommend is, whatever you are writing, again, a presentation, document, speech, Tinder profile, give it a headline, 6 to 10 words, no more than 10 words. It's got to be surprising. It's got to be provocative. It's got to be emotional. Often it works very well if it's a question, because our brain likes a question because it always likes to find an answer. So what you then do is, if once you have a title for your profile, your talk, your presentation, you can start building the thread. And then as you start building the thread, you might say, actually, no, that title doesn't work. I can change the title because that now fits. And they go together. And the title is not a description. It's not just a very bland, vanilla description. It's got to be, as I say, provocative and meaningful and original. So I think that would probably be my second one. I've talked about magic number three, which we saw could well be the third one. I think one other tip that I might just sort of talk about, though, is tone of voice and personality and character. And again, that's something that I keep sort of butting my head up against, and have ever since I worked in ad agencies, which is, there's a tendency that when we're, again, writing, speaking, or thinking about a CV, that we think the most important thing, or the only important thing, is the content, is what we say. And again, this may seem hopefully not too banal, but I think it's really, really true that often it's not just what we say, it's how we say it. And again, if you think about brands that we like, we relate to, you know, again, Guardian, Virgin, British Airways, Apple, Mike, whatever it might be, it doesn't matter, Starbucks, Pret a Manger. A lot of why we relate to those brands and connect to those brands is how they come over to us, not just what they say, but how they actually feel to us as brands. So I think my sort of final tip would be that, which is, storytelling is all about characters. Think, you can't have a story without characters. And we use the word character or tone of voice or personality quite a lot, but I think we should be doing it an awful lot more. So my final tip would be, when you're creating something or composing something, don't just think about the content, the matter, what you're saying. Think about how you're saying it. Think about the language, or think about the personality, or think about the way in which you can present it using pictures or movie clips or pictures of cars or animals, whatever it might be. Don't just think about the words and the facts. So So I think that would be my final of the three tips.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks very much, Taz, for speaking with me today. It was absolutely fascinating to discuss all things storytelling and your book, the Storytelling Workbook. So thank you very much.
Pleasure, and hope to speak again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.